Welcome to my Soul Series. Soul Series is part of Oprah and Friends, exclusively on XM Radio Channel 156. And you can listen to the entire Soul Series collection on xmradio.com/Oprah. It's uplifting, enlightening, truly powerful. Welcome to Soul Series.
Hi, welcome back to my Soul Series. So excited again because I get to talk to Eckhart Tolle. Last week we spoke of the power of now. He's a preeminent spiritual leader. I think he's a prophet for our time, for the 21st century, who believes that we are here to enable the divine purpose of the universe to unfold in us. That's in the beginning of his book, The Power of Now. And he's the author of that breakout bestseller. If you don't have it, it's one of the books that should be a part of your, you know, personal library forever. I can't even tell you how many copies I've bought for everybody. And if you were to come to my house right now and you were going to spend the night in either bedroom at my house, it doesn't matter which bedroom you would go to, you'd find a copy of The Power Now, sometimes two or three, because when people leave, they like to take it with them. The Power of Now, A Guide to Spiritual Enlightenment. And he's back to discuss his latest release, A New Earth, Awakening Your Life's Purpose. The inspiration for that title came from a Bible prophecy in both the Old and New Testament, where it speaks of the collapse of the existing world order and the rising of a new heaven and a new earth, for those of you who are Bible readers. Well, The Power of Now is one of the most comprehensive and enlightening books, as you've heard me say, Eckhart, I've ever had the privilege to read. Why did you feel the need to write a follow-up? You really didn't have to write another word after The Power of Now.
Well, that's true. The teaching evolved in the years after The Power of Now came out. I would travel around the world giving talks. And what happened then is this: some new approaches came, new perspectives on the same basic truths. It's not different truths. It's focusing on the same basic truths, but new perspectives towards it. And also I felt there was still something to be said about that which blocks the arising new consciousness in most human beings. Mm. So there's quite a bit in the book, A New Earth, about that in us which tends to block the awakened consciousness, the consciousness that wants to arise now. And one way of putting what that is to describe it, as I do in the book, it's the human ego.
Oh, this is my favorite thing to talk about, the ego. You say the ego is destined to dissolve. How so?
Well, first we need to see clearly what the ego is, because sometimes people use that word and they mean different things.
Yeah, they just mean you're being arrogant or...
That's right.
Yes.
It's a much wider thing. It's not just being selfish or being arrogant or thinking yourself superior. That's a small aspect of ego. Ego is basically a self-identification with the stream of thinking. So that... collectively, I would say the beginning of ego is actually described at the beginning of the Old Testament, where there is the famous story of the apple, which mm-hmm. everybody knows, even non-Bible readers. So it is said there that they ate of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge and good and evil. And that was when they lost that state that is externalized in the Bible and called paradise. What does that mean? To me, that means it is the arising of the ability to think and to differentiate between things. This is good, this is bad. To make statements like that, to make judgments like that, which is to be able to tell good, is basically the ability to think, which is a myth. So this is a mythological a description of what happened to humanity. And at first, the ability to think was not entirely bad. They lost something. They lost a deeper state of connectedness. But I don't think that deeper state of connectedness with being was lost immediately, as it's described in the Bible. I believe it took a long, long time of increased thinking until people reached a point where they derived their entire sense of who they are from the stream of thinking. So what that looks like in a person's life is there is a almost, one could say, a mind-made entity which is made up entirely of memories and past conditioning and mental concepts. And this entity, which really is all made up of thinking, people derive their sense of who they are from this mind-made entity. So it's a mind image of who I am. People have split themselves in two. They think there's me and there's myself. Me and my story. The ego is the story of me that people identify with.
You say in the New Earth, ego is no more than this, identification with form, which primarily means thought forms.
Yes, that's right. That's what the ego is.
And you say if evil has any reality, and it has a relative, not an absolute reality, this is also its definition of evil, complete identification with form,
yes,
physical forms, thought forms, emotional forms.
That's right.
And that this results in a total unawareness of my connectedness with the whole, my intrinsic oneness with every other, as well as with the source. And this forgetfulness is original sin, suffering, or delusion. And that's, you know, when I heard that, I thought, yes, you're right. For every evil act we've ever heard described, or when we think of people as, you know, doing sinful things, it is because of a complete and utter disconnection, a lack of understanding that I am that person that I am attempting to violate. I am that which I am jealous of. I am that.
Yes. It means you cannot sense the aliveness anymore that is in the other person. So you have desensitized yourself to the aliveness. Now, you can only do that if you've already done this to yourself, because by living through mental definitions of who you are, you desensitize yourself to the deeper aliveness of who you truly are beyond thinking.
Okay.
So you become, what arises then is a conceptual identity. I'm this, that, or the other. And then once you are trapped in your own conceptual identity, which is based on thinking and image-making by the mind,
right,
on your past, then you do the same to others. And this is the beginning of that, is always when you pronounce judgments on another person, and then you believe that judgment to be the truth, calling people, attaching labels to people. That's the beginning of desensitizing yourself to who that human being truly is.
I'm having a conversation here with Eckhart Tolle, who is author of The Power of Now, of course, and A New Earth, Awakening to Your Life's Purpose. So if you are not your story, and most people, I do believe, think that they are. We live in a world where people believe I am my story. I, you know, was born in this family, and this is where I was raised, and these are the things that happened to me, and this is what I did. If you are not your story, then who are you?
That's a very good question, because you cannot deny, of course, that these things exist.
Right.
Your memories of the past, things that you suffered, perhaps even things, suffering that you might have inflicted on others.
And even not all suffering, my family connections, the people I love.
Yes, you have a so-called past, you have relationships, all that is fine. It is not problematic unless you become totally lost in that dimension alone. So if you have no access to a deeper sense of aliveness or beingness beyond the stream of thinking, because really, all that is based on memory. All your past, how do you experience your past? You experience your past as memories.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what are memories? Memories are thoughts in your head. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if you're totally identified with all these thoughts in your head, then you are completely trapped in your past history. There's no sense of anything beyond that in your life.
Right.
So the important thing is am I more than my personal history?
Well, you speak in A New Earth, you speak about how advertisers are counting on us to believe in the labels, and that we identify with, particularly in our society, exclusive labels. And the more exclusive the label, the more we identify with it.
Yes, that's right, because the ego wants to be special one way or another. Every ego wants to be special. And if the ego cannot be special by being superior to others, the ego would also be quite happy with being specially miserable. So you may have seen witness people who are saying, one person says to the other, "I have a headache." The other person says, "You have a headache? I've had a headache for weeks." So people actually compete, who is more miserable, you or me? That's another, it's just the ego that does that is just as big as the ego that says, "I'm superior to you," because the ego always wants to be special. So if you recognize in yourself that unconscious need to be special, then you're already half free, because when you recognize all the patterns of the ego, and specialness is one pattern of the ego, another pattern of the ego, it wants to be right all the time. Another pattern of the ego is it actually needs, it loves conflict with others. And that's an amazing thing. Of course, it's unconscious, because the ego defines itself through a boundary that it draws between this is me and that is the other. And that's an important word, because the ego needs to emphasize the otherness of the other person. And that happens on a personal level when people are suspicious of other people's motives, mm-hmm. and so on. And there's a need for enemies, which is deeply built into the ego. The ego needs enemies because it defines itself through emphasizing the otherness of others. And nations do it, religions do it. The believer, if you identify with one particular religion, and for many people religion is only a mind structure, not in its deepest sense, but for many people a religion is an ideology that they identify with, and then they need the non-believer, the other, because by having the other, they feel their own sense of identity more strongly.
Right, and they need the other in order to feel their own sense of identity.
Yes.
More strongly.
Yes.
Yeah.
They need
enemies.
Thought
you said did such a great job of explaining this, because you say it first starts with a baby, when the baby first reaches for the toy and realizes, and the toy is taken away or not given to them, and they say, "No, that's mine."
That's right.
That's mine.
That's the beginning of identification with things.
Identification with things. And that what happens is that we all just grow up and we just get bigger toys, different toys.
That's right, yes. So it's always, ego is always identification with one form or another. It could be a physical form, mm-hmm. as a possession, my house, my car, and so on. So when you're identified, your sense of who you are is in that thing. So, and if that thing then is criticized, for example, by somebody else, you will become extremely defensive or aggressive, because you're feeling your very sense of self is being threatened.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other forms of identification, for example, my opinions, mind forms.
Right.
People have very strong identification with their mental positions.
And I am right.
I am right. And that implies, of course, that somebody else has to be wrong.
Right.
So that I can continue to be right.
But tell me this. Then I'm thinking this, that, you know, as long as we are in this dense human form, perhaps we must need the ego. Otherwise, why would we have it? Otherwise, we would have evolved out of it.
We are now evolving out of it. The ego has been there for thousands of years, and as you say, the fact that it was there has been there for thousands of years means it has its place
right.
in the evolution of humanity. So I'm not saying it should never have happened. The ego had its place because it was the ability to think developed more and more, so that gradually we became so identified with thinking that we lost a deeper connectedness with life, which is described as the paradise in the beginning of the Old Testament. that deeper connectedness with life. We are now, I believe, at an evolutionary transition where many human beings, far more human beings than ever before, are able to grow out of, go beyond ego into a new state of consciousness.
Yes, you say that we face a very stark and daunting choice, and that is to either evolve or die.
Yes. This is the point where the evolution of consciousness, the awakening of humanity, is no longer a luxury. Because now we've reached a point, if we don't grow out of the dysfunction of the ego, because the ego is now being amplified, the effects of this dysfunction are being amplified by technology.
Right.
So what we are doing to ourselves, to our fellow human beings, and to the planet is becoming more and more destructive and devastating.
Yes, I had a conversation actually with Elie Wiesel yesterday. He was saying that this will be known as the sixth century.
Yes.
And our ability just to do the most evil and sickest of things to one another.
Yes. I mean, look at the 20th century. It was dreadful, the worst ever in terms of human suffering inflicted on humans, by humans, on other humans.
Yes, but we were saying that it doesn't seem that we learned. We didn't learn. It seems to have gotten even worse, and you were right, because of technology, because there are even greater bombs, guns and ammunition that can kill from further distances.
Yes. Now, the question is, sometimes people ask me, are things actually getting better or worse? And my answer is, at the moment, things are both getting better and worse, which means there are two streams in existence now. One is the old stream, the old consciousness, the unenlightened, the unawakened, egoic consciousness, which is actually still continuing. You can see it a lot of the time when you watch the news in the evening.
that is the consciousness.
That's the old consciousness, which is still just as mad as before, if not more mad.
Well, the fact that we're just repeat all the bad things that are happening in the world.
That's right. That's one stream. The other stream is us sitting here now and talking, because that represents we are part of, I'm not saying we are special, but the fact that we are addressing this and the fact that many, many people are listening to this and it is meaningful to them means that there is another stream here, which is the stream of humanity awakening. And both are present at this time on the planet.
And as we choose to evolve, you and I sitting here and everyone else who's listening to us, and this conversation hits a nerve or has a moment, I call them aha moments, or they just find the conversation interesting and will cause them to look at life differently today. As we do that, are we actually creating a new earth?
We are. First of all, what happens is a new state of consciousness arises.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's not so much that we now need to get busy and create a new earth, because that would be premature. Many times humans have tried to create a new society or a utopia, and they all failed miserably. So look at communism. It started with a good idea. Everybody is equal, and see what it did. Millions of people were killed in the name of communism. So first of all, the important thing is that we are open to the transformation of consciousness that is happening now. Out of that transformed consciousness, which in essence simply means we are no longer completely identified with thinking. We realize that inside ourselves there is a dimension in which I am conscious, I am present, I'm awake, I'm alert, but I'm simply an aware space. That's presence. I call it presence. You can have other words for it: awareness, unconditioned consciousness,
stillness.
That arises now in many human beings. And so as that arises and gradually replaces identification with thinking and replaces relying on thinking exclusively to run your life, there's actually, in that stillness, in that awareness, there is a higher, far greater intelligence at work.
I know you say, I love how you say, let us allow nature to teach us stillness. If you want to understand stillness, you know, stand beside a tree or watch a tree.
Yes, that's a great help. Just watching a tree, a plant, and be there, just watch it, be there as the aware presence that perceives the flower, the tree, the plant, the animal. Nature is always very helpful for people who want to connect with the stillness. Man-made things very often generate more thinking because they are made through thinking. So go to nature, and then eventually it's important, of course, that you also are able to sustain the state of stillness even in the midst of a city. I actually enjoy, I'm in New York at the moment, I enjoy walking along the busy, busy streets with infernal noise and people rushing about and feeling actually in the background a deep sense of stillness.
Really?
And actually, I can even enjoy all that movement. And it's wonderful to be able to be there as the stillness and not completely get drawn into some reaction.
It's like being in the world but not of it.
That's exactly what it is.
Being in the world but not of it.
Yes.
So tell us how we can get to be more like you. How can we not allow ourselves to be dominated by the ego? I know it's a lifelong process, but just for those who are listening now, who are going to read A New Earth and read The Power of Now and come away thinking, okay, I'm inspired by that, stimulated by it. What can I begin to do today to not to have myself dominated by my ego?
Yes. Now, the ego cannot survive in the stillness. That's important to realize. So that means invite stillness into your life. Now, that does not mean that stillness is something that you need to get from the outside or somehow create for yourself. It's realizing that everybody underneath the stream of thinking already has the stillness.
Right. So you don't have to go to Hawaii and sit on a mountaintop.
No. And you don't have to do anything to create it because essentially it's already there. And if you look very deeply into yourself and see where does my sense of I-ness, when people say I, they have this sense of I am essentially the deeper I. Where does that sense of I-ness come from? And then if you look very closely, you'll find it's actually intrinsically bound up with this, the dimension of stillness. So that's why I say in my book, Stillness Speaks, you are never more essentially yourself than when you are still. So you invite stillness into your life. You can do it by taking a few conscious breaths many times during the day. Just observe your breath flowing in and out. Another way of bringing stillness or finding the stillness that's already there is feeling the aliveness of your body from within. I call that the inner body. Mm-hmm. And that immediately takes your attention away from the stream of thinking, a lot of which is repetitive and useless, mm-hmm. and bring it into the body and feel, is there life in my hands? And then you feel it. Oh, yes, very subtle, but it's there. Is there life in my feet, my legs, my arms? And then you feel that your entire inner body is pervaded by a sense of aliveness. And then that can serve as an anchor for remaining present when your attention, or part of your attention, remains in the inner body. Even at this very moment, for people who are listening to us, they can practice it and they can see that even while they are conscious of the words that they hear, they're completely following what we are saying, mm-hmm. but it does not need to take up 100% of their attention. They can have some of their attention, even as they sit there or stand there and listen, in the inner energy field of the body and feel there is an aliveness in every cell of the body. And that's a wonderful anchor for stillness and for presence. It doesn't mean you turn completely away from the external world. It actually brings balance into your life between being still and being still being able to deal with things out here.
It's finding the space in between.
That's right.
It's finding the space. It's like when you're reading the book. I remember reading the book, Power of Now, for the first time, and you were saying it is the space in between. It's the awareness of what's on the page and the space in between that awareness.
Yes. And you may also find, okay, talking about the space in between, that you may sometimes become aware when a thought has come to an end in your head that between two thoughts there is a short silent space. And when you acknowledge that, which means you suddenly become conscious that for a moment there's no thinking, then it becomes a little longer. And so you have a longer gap of stillness.
Yeah.
And then...
But if you become aware for so long, you start thinking about it, and then you lose it.
Then you lose it. The moment you say, oh, look, I'm not thinking, then you're thinking again, of course.
Right. Is there anyone on Earth at this time who you think is free of the domination of the ego? First of all, are you free of the domination of the ego?
I'm not identified with my thinking, which means I'm free of domination of the ego. And there are many, many people right now who are going through this process. They may not yet be 100% free, but they are going through the process in which they become gradually disidentified from the stream of compulsive thinking. I'm getting letters, emails every day from all over the world of people who are telling me how their lives have changed, sometimes just by reading the book, and how they become free of identification with their mind. They are not yet totally free, which means sometimes they fall back into ego. Sometimes they fall back into obsessive thinking, compulsive thinking, addictive thinking, because for many people thinking is basically an addiction. And then suddenly they wake up again. So it's a process that many, many people are now undergoing. I cannot tell you exactly how many, but my intuition is that in the Western world, about 10% of the adult population are at the beginning stages or a bit further, some further advanced, of this process.
Well, I love also how you say in the book, we're talking about, you know, the whole tone of the book is about awakening your life's purpose. A New Earth is awakening your life's purpose. And you say that there are a lot of people who realize that how spiritual you are has nothing to do with what you believe, but everything to do with your state of consciousness.
Yes, and that's, again, it's the stillness that's the spiritual dimension. It's not any thought. Thought in itself is not spiritual.
Right.
Thought can be sometimes helpful because it can be a pointer. For example, when
and
we
beliefs
say...
beliefs are not spiritual. That's what I learned
beliefs,
from you.
No, because beliefs are
not
are thoughts.
Spiritual.
No.
Yeah.
Some beliefs can be helpful, but only as pointers. I mean, even if we say, find the stillness that's already inside you, that's still a thought, but the thought is pointing beyond itself.
Well, I love what you say that at the end of the book, that the foundation for a new earth is a new heaven, the awakened consciousness, because what did Jesus tell his disciples? That heaven is right here in the midst of you.
Yes, that's a wonderful thing. Jesus said, heaven does not come with signs to be observed. You can't say, ah, there it is, or look, here it is, because it is essentially already within you, in the midst of you.
The stillness.
The stillness.
All right. Can you believe another? We're out of time again. Next, those of you who've been so intrigued, so empowered by words that you've heard and read over the years, and not just from listening to us, will have an opportunity to ask questions of Eckhart Tolle here on our Soul Series. Thank you again. Our listeners get to talk to you. That's going to be great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this edition of our Soul Series. These are some of my favorite conversations.
To hear more, sign up for a free 30-day XM Radio trial by going to www.xmradio.com/Oprah.